hell?
Everybody get up! Everybody get up! Everybody needs to understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group. Just like GEICO is more than just a company that can save you money. GEICO also has fast and friendly claim service, so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost a sheep, and she don't know where to find them. Go!
GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Whatever argument you're making, I'm in on the murder people.
Yeah, so just prepare to...
It'll be great.
It'll be perfect.
Y'all motherfuckers don't watch us play throughout the year, to tell you the truth. I'm gonna be real with you, and I don't care if I get fined.
That train is off the track.
Who doesn't love the bounty castle?
Hitler. Just prepare to... just prepare to be awash in unbeatable goodness.
Welcome, Pacers fans. You are listening to The Undebeatables, your semi-weekly Pacers podcast and member of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. This is episode 228. Coming to you from Washington, D.C., I'm your host, Jason Triplett, a.k.a. The Doctor. This week, or this episode, we're going to press the PG panic button, and we're going to discuss some potential trades and trade rumors in Pacerland. Plus, we're going to answer an undergoogleable question. We'll give you Joey's stat of the week, even in absentia. And we're going to preview the game of the week against the Heat. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. You can get a free audiobook and a 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/almighty. They have over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Joining me to delve into all these interesting problems and press all of the panic buttons are two of our three analysts, coast to coast like butter toast. First, from Indianapolis, Indiana, he's our in-house bartender, mixing up the drinks and the crappy jingles, John Colson.
What is up, Pacer Nation? It's Thirsty Thursday. You should definitely drink up. I'd also like to shout out to Andrew Preston, 33. Those who listen to the show, we answered his undergoogleable last week. And I thought, you know, showed ourselves well enough about the Houston Rockets. What I thought was most stunning is that we speculated on his
wildly
on his name on his Twitter handle, I suppose. And we wondered why it wasn't Andrew Preston 31 for Reggie Miller. And that maybe it was 33 for Larry Bird. Andrew reached out to us and said that he attempted actually to get 31, wasn't available, and actually did choose 33 for Larry Bird. So I think we probably did better on that speculation than on our Houston Rockets speculation. So
I think that's a bonus point in under Google Bowl, man.
So again, thanks for sending that in, and we will continue to speculate wildly and get the wrong things right.
Helping us get the wrong things right, from Eugene, Oregon, out west, he's our enforcer, John Harper.
What up, fellas? Now I want to shout out to Andrew Preston 31. Wherever you are, I'm assuming that you're a Pacers fan, so...
Yeah. Tweet at
shout
us,
out,
bro.
Yeah, tweet at us. Undebeatables.com.
Yeah, actually, before we get started, if you want to do that, if you want to tweet at us or get in touch with us, you can do it lots of places. We're on Twitter. We're at Undebeatables. Give us a follow. We're on Facebook.com/TheUndebeatables. Give us a like there. We have a website, TheUndebeatables.com. There's a contact form there. Or you can email us at shoutout@TheUndebeatables.com.
Shout out.
Okay. First up, boys. Pacers are currently on a 6-game slide, went into the All-Star break, and things do not look good. And I am ready to hit the button on Paul George. And here's the reason. Paul George is not a happy camper. He's got one more year here, and I don't know if he's going to re-sign. He certainly hasn't committed that way, which is fine for him. Harper, can you talk me off a ledge, or are you going to make this worse for me?
Just to clarify, he actually has 2 years, but the second year is a player option, right? So he can opt out after next season. Is that correct?
Yes, which he will do because there's so much money out there in the universe with the new collective bargaining agreement.
Or bargaining.
A hamburglar.
There's a lot of stuff out there that is going to make you nervous as a Pacers and a Paul George fan. It's clear that he's not happy. 2 weeks ago, we were getting, I'm living in the moment and we're playing happy. And now we're riding a 6-game losing streak into the All-Star break, and there's a dark cloud hanging over Pacers universe. Paul George talks a lot at the press about what may or may not be wrong. He even talked a little bit this week about how we weren't adjusting well and maybe need to adjust our defense. And Nate was quoted something like, he said, "What? He didn't bring that to me." There was also what you would probably expect, a rather scathing article from Doyle talking about how he basically, even with our top two fours out, Paul George is more or less still refusing to play for us. Now, can I talk you off a ledge? I mean, first you got to define the problem, right? At this point, with a player option after next year, every game that we lose takes us further away from getting him re-signed, right? It means that we have to do more from here on out, right? We are not setting a precedent of winning that's going to impress a top 10 talent in this league.
He wants to play for a contender.
As do all top 10 talent players. Now, Doyle suggests that he's a top 10 talent with top 25 numbers, so make of that what you will. But it's clear that he's airing a lot of beef to the media right now. It's not clear if he's talking to Larry Bird or his coaching staff. So, I guess, like I said, how do you define the problem? Is the problem not winning? Is the problem getting him re-signed? Both of those are problems.
Sure. Yeah. I think they're intertwined. You know, we have to make a situation where Paul George is happy and he feels like, as Colson alluded to, that he can win a title, right? Silver lining stuff is he was interviewed by KG in Area 21, which is a delightful segment on a TNT show. And he, said that he wants to bring a title to Indiana. And even in other interviews, he said that he wants to be the first person to bring a title to Indiana, NBA title. And he alluded to Jeff Teague as an all-star, and that he's missing Thad Young. Those are good things. But my fear is that he just doesn't see the pieces around him, or doesn't feel that there is a chemistry building that is conducive to title contention.
But on some level, it's not just that we have to make a decision about whether or not we can keep Paul George. At some level, we have to make a decision about whether we want to keep Paul George. And I know that fundamentally, all of us want to do that.
Sure.
But it's also concerning when he's quoted as saying things like, "Say what you want, I want to compete for something." It's frustrating just playing the game for stats or for numbers or to showcase yourself.
Right. Right.
And he ended that quote with, "Man, I want a chance to play to win a championship." But I think it's clear to me, and feel free to disagree if you like, there is no realistic chance of the Pacers winning a championship in the next 3 years. I don't see that as a legitimate thing that could happen. Not with the Warriors, not with the Spurs, and not with the Cavs as currently constructed.
Well, yeah, it's currently constructed, yes. I guess the other question you have to ask is, if Paul George is your best player, can you win a title with Paul George?
So,
no.
Wow.
No. Wow. No. Okay.
Are you saying that because he's not willing to put in the work to make that happen? I mean, on some level, is he saying, "Hey, I need more help, and I've got to be on a team that's going to be able to vie for a championship," as opposed to, "I'm going to make this team vie for a championship"? Is that why you're saying that, or do you just don't feel like he's that good?
I mean, Colson, you're my man here, but when you look back at the teams that are winning the championship over the past 20 years, 25 years, they've got top five guys on their team.
Okay.
In the league,
well,
with the very notable exception of the Detroit Pistons, right?
Sure, sure. Okay, but I think I would say that the ingredients, you're right, is usually a top five guy. But as long as you're in the top five or the top 10 in defense and the top 10 in offense, and you have a top 10 player, then you can be a part of that conversation.
I think that's historically been true, but I think that there's stratification in the league right now that we've never seen. The league has never seen a team like the Warriors. And
sure.
Teams, players like LeBron, they've never had the kind of clout that they do now. Every free agent in the league is going to take a meeting with LeBron, right? And I'm not saying that he gets his pick of the litter, but he's already going after the owner of his team, letting him know, hey, you're going to have to spend more money, because he wants another guy getting paid $20 million a year, and he doesn't care about what the salary cap or the penalty is. He's already doing that. And that's politics, because he knows that in order, in this day and age, to keep this team competitive, he's going to have to keep getting guys. And we're just nowhere near on the level of talent. And Paul George, frankly, right now, is not a top 10 player in this league.
Correct. I would agree with that right now. I think I would take issue with the... I think that if Paul George could be the best player on a championship team, I think that that is a true statement. I think that...
If it was coached by Pop, sure.
I think it depends on a lot of things, right? I think it depends on the right people around him. I think it depends on the coaching staff, obviously. I think it depends on the landscape of the NBA, right? And so, yeah, I mean, if you forecast that the Warriors are going to stay together intact for the next 4 to 5 years... it's going to be difficult for anybody to win a championship, in my opinion, including LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers, because that team is just playing basketball at a level that is not been seen before.
And like I said, I think LeBron recognizes that and is already preparing his owner to pay another guy a bunch of money to be there. And, you know, I'm sure that he'd love to have Paul George on his team playing too.
Right. Colson, you've been kind of quiet over there. I'm worried about you. Are you okay?
I'm not okay.
Stroked out.
No. So what I'm hearing, around the bars and from some folks is starting to be the first time that I've heard this is Paul George the right piece? I think, you know, we as podcasters and fans in general have just been so excited about this talent, a guy who plays both ways.
It's the best talent we've ever had on the team.
Ever.
Yeah. And you're talking about, like, he currently, right now, is in the top 10 in points in the fourth quarter and is second in shooting percentage in the fourth quarter of any, you know, of players in that category. This guy is playing in the clutch. He's doing the kind of things that a superstar does, and you feel like you've got a chance to win with him on your team if he's engaged and he could stop the guy he's guarding. He can score when he needs to. That's the kind of stuff that brings me as a fan real confidence, right? I mean, the kind of stuff that I didn't have without Reggie Miller. You know, Reggie Miller always gave you a chance to win in the fourth, and I feel like this guy does that. And as a fan, you don't want to lose something like that. But I'm starting to hear people go, hey, look, maybe, you know, maybe this guy isn't committed. Maybe he doesn't want to be on this team. Maybe we should just trade him and get some pieces. And I'm going to them, you guys are insane. This is, he's a elite talent. And it's so hard to find elite talent in this league. When you get it, you've got to try to hold on to it. But it really concerns me that the conversation is turning in this direction. You know? I mean, is this team as constructed around Paul George not going to be able to get it done, and we're going to have to either lose him in free agency or potentially trade him? Like, that's insane. Mm-hmm. That's insane for me.
I mean,
that's what I'm saying. Like, that's where we're
quickly
at.
Quickly headed towards a Rubicon, right?
Oh, man.
I want to, you know, dispel these things. If people are hating on Paul George for not signing an extension right now,
I don't think that's useless energy, right?
Yeah. You shouldn't be spending your energy thinking about that. He shouldn't be thinking about signing an extension right now. He should be playing a whole nother season. Yeah. And the Pacers have a whole nother season to approach this Rubicon and then make the decision, I think.
Yeah. Right.
But if we're in the same place at the All-Star break next year, with the trade deadline looming, I think these conversations are going to get much more heated about whether or not you should flip him for assets at that point, right?
Right.
I mean, and so we'll that brings me to the what we have to do, right?
Hopefully, yeah. Yes. I mean, who knows? I mean, if we're, say we're third in the Eastern Conference next year at the All-Star break, headed for a, you know, a 50-win season, but probably not looking at a title. Do you think that Paul George is a guarantee to sign in the offseason?
No, but I think that that extra year and, you know, $219 million might be enough at that point. I think if we're sixth or seventh in the league at next All-Star break, the numbers... He's bolting. Yeah, he's bolting. But I think that there, you know, we will have an opportunity to pay him more money than anybody else will be able to pay him. And I think if we're at least competitive at that point, I think we could feel better about our chances. Right now, I don't think he feels like that money is enough because he doesn't feel like he has enough around him.
No, I mean, what's the difference between $200 and $219 million, really?
Right. Well, no, because we're the only ones that can offer him a fifth year. You're good at math. But I mean, nobody else could offer
it's more than that. I think the difference is more than that. I think the difference is a total of like $100 million.
Yeah, it's a lot of money because
he'll
make that money on the next contract anyway.
The numbers are at this point, the low end of the numbers that he would make is still generational amounts of money.
Exactly. My only point is that money is so big now. I just don't think that players look at this in the same way that they did a few years ago when you'd only make $50 million over the course of your career. If you sign a $150 million contract, you've got to be pretty reckless to get through that money.
I mean, I think it will make a difference for guys that are signing their first big contract, maybe. Yes. But PG has already signed his first big contract. He's already set for life.
And he's also
the next two generations or whatever.
He's also got his Gatorade endorsement and his Nike. This guy, the market that he's in matters to him, right?
Sure.
And whatever money, extra money we can pay him, he could just as easily mentally say, I can make more money with name recognition in a different market. So I just think that the money thing is a wash. I think that the big thing is, can we get this guy happy? And he's
sure. So that's what I want to transition to right now is getting the pieces around him to be successful and be a contending team. And right now, Larry Bird has come out in the last week and has said, we are totally willing to trade our first round draft pick. And I should say the trade deadline is today, Thursday, as fans are listening to this. So perhaps this is all dated conversation and a move has been made. But my question is should we trade that draft pick for a piece? A is the question, or B, should we keep that draft pick because that it's a deep draft and maybe that's a more valuable building block for PG going forward? And if we should trade that draft pick, what is the piece out there that we could acquire that would make PG that would build this team to another level, to a contending, at least for the East sort of level. So, Colson, let's answer the first question. Should they trade the draft pick or not?
I don't care about the draft pick, honestly. Like, okay. I mean, either way. Like, if we can't... I don't want to just give away the draft pick. I mean, I don't want to throw it at something that's not going to move the needle much. Okay. But I don't think this... You know... Sure, it's going to be a good draft, but we're going to be drafting in the 20s, and those things are hit and miss. You know, I mean... You know... I'm sure the stats on drafting in the 20s is that most of these guys don't even stick around the league that much, you know, even in a deep draft. Well,
certainly it's hard for them to make an impact in their first year.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is what we would want this player to make. Right.
So, hey, you know what? Let's make it available and see if we can get a piece. But there are also lots of other teams right now that are saying the same thing. I'm willing to move this draft pick for a piece. So I don't know how much that helps us get somebody significant. I mean... If we could go out and get, say, a Paul Millsap for a draft pick and a piece, I would be totally in on that. I think that helps move the needle, but I don't know if that's enough. I think there are plenty of other people out there saying, hey, I'll give you a draft pick and a piece for Paul Millsap. You know, I'm not sure what offering up that first round draft pick is going to do in the way of totally changing the course of this franchise at this trade deadline. I mean, that's just kind of where I'm at.
Well, it's the best asset that we have.
Sure, sure.
That we're willing to trade.
That we're willing to trade. Sure.
Well, right.
Now, beyond that, what is it that we need, right? What is it that's going to make us that much better? What's going to make us take a leap? And, you know, that's essentially another all-star level player. That's what we're looking for. And that's hard to get unless you're willing to, you know, give up some stuff. Now, apparently you can get Serge Ibaka for Terrence Ross and a first round draft pick, but so maybe it's not as hard as I thought.
The Serge move already got made though.
Right. Right.
That was probably the sexiest option that was out there, right? And Colson, I think you hit the nail on the head, right? Therein lies the rub. So you've got this first round draft pick, which could easily net you a player who's a valuable NBA player. But as you said, Jason, they're not going to make an impact next year when we need that impact to be made. So that draft pick is almost – like if we can't keep Paul George, that draft pick means almost nothing, right? Mm-hmm. So we need to convert that into something, and it has to be something that's useful immediately. There's teams out there that are looking to get better, right? My guy was Tyreek Evans, but now it looks like the – you know, the Pelicans are out there aggressively themselves trying to get better right now. They're not having a fire sale. There's more teams that are looking to get better than there are looking to break up their teams. So unless you want a Nick, it's going to be awfully hard to get value back in return right now.
The Lakers are having a fire sale. They have to have a top three pick to save their pick and next year's pick. So they've got to go full tank mode. They're gonna sell off everybody. So if you want a Laker, you can have a Laker.
So if you want a Laker or a Nick, you can have that.
Why can't we make a play for Damian Lillard or CJ McCollum?
Because they won't trade them for any pieces that we would be willing to offer.
Aren't they like in rebuild mode? Aren't they collecting draft picks?
But they're building around those guys. I would be shocked if either of those guys got moved.
I thought they liked those guys, but they felt like they couldn't be a backcourt together. Like, could we trade Jeff Teague, our first round draft pick, and cap fodder for Damian Lillard?
I can't imagine they would trade Damian Lillard. I mean, God bless. I'd make that trade all day, but...
Could we trade Jeff Teague, a first round draft pick, and cap fodder for CJ McCollum?
I don't want that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't want a small two.
I'm with you. I liked the first one.
But what if we made him a large one?
Then I think we get back to the George Hill conundrum, which is now we've got a 2-1.
Jeff Teague's been playing very well for us. I mean, do we feel like, Jason, are you feeling like he's the piece that is part of the chemistry issue, or do you feel like He's not played up to potential. I feel like he's been our second best player this year.
I think he's been fantastic. Yeah. I totally agree with that. I just feel like he's not under contract next year.
Mm.
So there's, you know, we have to make a decision.
We're going to have to give him $20 million a year, probably. Season. Right.
Right.
Yeah. If we fail to convert on him, boy, it's going to be tough to keep Paul around.
Right.
Right. Exactly.
So,
or get in somebody of equivalent talent.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So
through free agency, which is a hard thing to do in the state of Indiana.
Yeah.
So I feel like Larry Bird did a really good job of going and getting talented pieces in this offseason. You know, I feel like Jeff Teague, Thaddeus Young, and Al Jefferson are all talented NBA players that can, you know, that can help us get better. I don't understand what the what's wrong, honestly. I don't know why we're not better than a 500 team. Because I feel like the talent we have suggests to me that we should be that. We should be above a 500 team.
Well, I think we have a coach without a plan.
Okay.
And
an unhappy superstar.
That hurts, and an unhappy superstar. We have an unhappy leader, and that those two things lead to... And then apparently we also have a chemistry issue in the locker room.
Which we know that Larry Bird doesn't talk to people before he signs them, so...
Right.
So we know that these personalities...
And so who knows... And we're
vetted.
Yeah. Exactly. So it would be wild speculation on our part to say who's not getting along, right. But clearly somebody is not getting along.
So right Larry now, Bird...
Everybody.
Larry Bird needs to go figure out who that person is and attach
them to... But why Larry Bird, though? Why is that not Nate McMillan's job?
Well, whoever it is, what I'm saying is if Larry Bird's going to trade somebody, if he's going to trade his first round draft pick, that person needs to be attached to that draft pick, and they need to get the hell out of here.
Or one side of that.
Yeah, of that disagreement.
Whatever disagreement is going on.
And
is there any way that we can pry Jimmy Butler from the Bulls? This has been my dream
move. I would love that so much.
For the past 3 years. Apparently he is on the market, and... Yes. The Bulls are morons. So, I mean, I assume we could get this done. Could we convince them that our draft pick is amazing and
to take Monte Ellis, Jeff Teague, not Miles Turner in a draft pick?
Or Rodney Stuckey?
Well, okay. Rodney Stuckey. let's really break this down right now. Okay. So we're what? 15th in pace in the league. We're like 15th in offense. And like 15th in defense. I mean, I don't know if I haven't looked at the numbers recently, but like we're pretty much...
We're the definition of a middle of the
pack. Of a 500 team. So what is it that we really need, right? So like clearly defense. We need... Well, okay, so you want defense and you want rebounding, right? Well, rebounding has been our Achilles heel all season.
Sure.
So going out and getting, you know, Damian Lillard doesn't solve that problem. You know, now granted he's a superstar and that helps, but... I mean, do you want to go out and just get, you know, a defensive rebounder to put in that four spot where Thaddeus Young is? You know, we've talked about how we're missing Thaddeus Young out of this lineup because he brings so much intangibles and hustle, but he makes us undersized. I mean, could you put a guy at four and then put Thaddeus at three?
I mean, if we're going to play the pace that we're playing, like Serge would have been my guy, right? He's a great fit. And Al Horford, you know, a stretch five who can rebound and defend the rim.
But I mean, does Paul Millsap? Does Paul Millsap solve that problem for you?
Sure, but can we get him?
I'm just saying the guy plays defense and he rebounds and he can score.
Sure. If you can get him for Thaddeus Young in a first rounder, sure. Yes, I would take an all-star.
Yeah.
And put him next to Miles Turner.
But I don't want to put this on Thaddeus's, you know, front doorstep. Like, I don't feel like he's been a problem.
I don't know. It's not his fault, but it's not, Paul Millsap's an upgrade.
He's a businessman.
Right.
Yeah. Like, Paul Millsap's an upgrade.
Right.
I mean, to me, you know, our real problem lies in we're playing small ball at a slow pace. Right. Which has never made much sense to me. But we've got a superstar who could potentially be a stretch four who refuses to do so. And that's kind of at the heart of our lack of identity for me, right? We're so also, we either need to get ourselves a center Or we need to get ourselves a three, put Paul George at two, and get this pace up, which means we'd have to fire Nate. So take your pick, but it's time to make a decision.
Is the Miles Turner at five, you know, experiment over? Is this how we want to go into the future, or do we feel like he can be a four for us and we need a bruising five?
I could be either, but again, you have to match your pace to your geometry, right?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know that we're going to solve this problem today. So
I just can't figure out what's wrong. And I assume that Larry Bird has the same problem. And so making a trade without any information, I mean, he has more information than we do, but if he's probably got to be thinking to himself as well, what's not working here?
So here's the problem. He knows what the problem is. The problem is the coaching. The problem is the superstar. The problem is the chemistry. The problem is the GM, who's not actually a GM. He's a president of basketball operations, but who orchestrates all these trades without talking to anyone first, right? Great. Which of those problems is the worst? That's a different question. But all of those things are wrong right now.
I mean, what you would hope that, you know, when we talk about this on the podcast all the time, what you would hope is that Larry Bird is picking up the phone this week and talking to Paul George and saying, what do you need around you? What would make this team better? And really probing that conversation. And that, and maybe talking to Miles Turner too, right? Who he has clearly indicated are his two pieces that he does, that he wants to build around and that he does not want to trade. So I feel like you get those two guys in a room and you say, hey dudes, how do I do this? Who do you want? You know,
you want David West from, you know, 4 years ago. Sure. No. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like the badass. I'm not afraid of anybody. I'm going to mix it up. I'm confident as hell. I'm a professional. Mm. I'm a leader. You know, there is.
Yeah. That's all fine and well, but that locker room was broken too.
No, I agree. But yeah. I'm saying that's what this is missing. I think we've talked about the irrational confidence guy. You know, there's something that seems wrong with, yeah, everybody's gone from that locker room that was broken. Except PG.
Yeah. And the locker room's still broken.
PG, the core of the
locker. Well, and that's what I'm saying. And that's what JJ would say, right?
Yeah, JJ would definitely say that.
And JJ is not alone.
Let's take a break to hear from our sponsor. For you, listeners of The Undebeatables, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. Books I would recommend, or things that I am thinking about checking out on audible.com. I was listening to an interesting podcast with Bill Simmons and Malcolm Gladwell, and they referred to the new Michael Lewis book, The Undoing Project, which I love his books. I don't know if you've read any of them or listened to any of them by Audible. He also wrote The Big Short and The Blind Side. Really good writer. So anyway, I'm interested in checking out this book. The other book, we were just talking about Larry Bird. You can download When the Game Was Ours, which is an audiobook version of the Jackie McMullen book profiling Larry Bird and Magic Johnson and the way that they saved the NBA in the 1980s. I'd recommend those two. I think that's what I'm going to listen to. So if you want to do that, you can get your free audiobook and 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/almighty. Once again, that's audibletrial.com/almighty. All right, so we like to read stuff, and we like to listen to things. And we do a whole segment where we Google things, and we try to, you know, increase our own knowledge base and hopefully provide some knowledge to you, the listener. There were some things going around in the NBA world today that give me pause, and I know give you, Harper and Coulson, pause. And what I want to know is, what is up with this "the Earth is flat" crap coming out of Kyrie Irving's mouth this week? Did you guys hear about this?
I don't think you can't prove the Earth is round.
What? Hold me back.
What? What? Do you have your own sundial? You don't know how to make a sundial?
You're right. My sundial skills are whack.
So he was on some radio show for the All-Star Weekend and just went bananas?
No, it was on his boys podcast. It was like Channing Frye's podcast.
And he just went nuts
Richard
and was
Jefferson
like...
Richard Jefferson and Channing Frye, yeah.
It was just like, the earth is flat and you can't prove it otherwise?
Let's go ahead and just read the quote. Even after his teammates tried to tell him that the earth is in fact spherical, he persisted. Quote, "For what I've known for many years and what I've been taught is that the earth is round. But if you really think about it, from a landscape of the way we travel, the way we move, and the fact that, can you really think of us rotating around the sun and all the planets aligned, rotating in specific dates? Don't know what that means. Being perpendicular and what's going on with these planets and stuff like this. Yeah, that's that. I mean, if that's not a coherent argument.
So his question is, can I think of that? And my answer is yes. I can totally envision that. Realm.
Well, I don't know what rotating in specific dates or being perpendicular means, but other than that,
the way we travel, meaning we drive on roads, is that his?
That we walk and we're not walking around a
curve all the time.
Although there are hills, so why would you not think that the Earth was just like one giant multiple spiral thing?
The thing that really gets me about this is that, and Draymond later in the week came out and said that. In a tweet, I think, that he was with Kyrie, that he thinks the earth is flat. But what kills me is, so these guys travel by plane like three times a week, right? And so you go up in the air, and you can literally see the curvature of the earth.
Mm. Sure. If you look out the window, maybe they always have the aisle seat, maybe. More leg room.
They just never looked out the window on an airplane.
Or they put those eye shades on. They just sleep.
Sure.
Yeah, not only that, but they travel literally around the world. Like,
okay. That's a good point, too.
So, okay. No. That you're making too much sense. Just stop it, right? So the only thing I can think of is that this is part of the conspiracy theory that no one's ever been to space before. Right? That we didn't go to the moon, that we don't have satellites, that all this is, it's all just made up fake news, right? That's the only thing that, because otherwise we clearly have pictures of the Earth that's round. So you have to believe that space travel has never existed. And then you could sort of make an argument that since we haven't seen it from the outside, that it all could be flat.
Yeah.
So your argument is that the pictures from satellites
are fake.
That clearly show that the Earth is round.
I mean, those have to be
spherical. That those are all photoshopped.
Right.
Prior to the existence of Photoshop.
Yes. And also, I think we proved...
Well, you don't know what NASA's got, man. Tell me what NASA's got.
I mean, they have Velcro... You know, they came up with Tang. They've got. They could do whatever they want.
So what worries me? What worries me as a scientist? My job is to understand the world around me as best I can, right? And uncover fundamental truths about the way in which the world works. And what scares me about this line of thinking, and a lot of thinking that's going on, or a lot of stuff that is floating out there in our current environment, is that there's this backlash against knowledge and the rejection of knowledge because it's being presented to you as some sort of hoax, or like the idea you brought up, the idea of fake news, which now is a term that's being bantied around about anything.
Alternative facts.
If you don't agree with it, it's fake news, right? And I know I'm getting on my soapbox a little bit, but this is super duper duper concerning, right? If we're going to make decisions as a society about how to conduct our society and how to direct the way that we put our efforts forward, we have to have an agreed upon reality, right? And that starts with fundamental things like Earth is round. Excuse my language.
I will argue that there has long in this country been a pretty robust strand of anti-intellectualism.
Sure, so absolutely.
Some of that doesn't concern me that much. And there's always been wide disagreement about sort of the underlying reality. We have run this country for hundreds of years where people, you know, sort of disagreed about some fundamental truths. That in and of itself doesn't concern me. But this is a different level, right? This isn't underpinned by anything, as near as I can tell, particularly, besides the fact that I just don't want to believe it. And so even if I give it the most generous reading that I can, which is that it's some weird postmodern allegory about how, you know, fake news is taking over or something, this is compounding the problem, not helping it.
No, I really, I'm with you, Harper. I really want this to be some sort of conspiracy.
This is a joke. This is definitely a joke.
It's got to be some joke that the NBA players are all in on, and they think it's funny. Yeah. And it's, you're right, it's some sort of, it's speaking to our modern day culture in some way. But you're right, it's also allowing people that want to deny stuff the ability to continue to deny it. I may just be too old to get it, but it seems destructive to me instead of funny if it is a joke.
But I like this idea. I like this idea that the greatest athletes on the planet are also putting on the most elaborate piece of performance art that maybe the world has ever seen. Like, but you are influenced. These guys are role models. People listen to you, and they get information from you, and it's
kids who need to learn about science so that we can be a badass country in 50 years. I need kids who know science so that they can,
instead of saying as far as the eye can see, it's all flat and I can't see beyond what's flat, so it all just assume it must be flat, even though you can look at the moon and see the curvature of the shadow of the earth. You can also, if you believe in gravity, you understand that everything must be pulled at equal rates to create spheres.
Right, yeah. I want to know if he... So, is this thing that the way that we get around, it has to be flat because that's the way we move. But that, you're right. That means he has to buy into the idea that there's something pulling us down.
Right, so we're not floating around.
Onto the Earth, so we're not floating away. And if that's the case, then you kind of have to buy into the, you know, the rest of it.
No, Jeebus pulls us down.
Right. Forgot about that guy.
Kyrie, come on. Just go. Just please. Seriously. Oh, man.
Just bail me out, bro.
Come on, Kyrie. Help us out.
Come on, Kyrie.
Let's get a knowledge palate cleanser. Let's do some undergoogling.
Undergoogleables.
That was the plan. I'm
super excited.
You told us we had to.
You said we signed up for it.
In the end, it's going to be better and more true than Google can give you.
Will this really help?
Yeah, I don't know. Going from stuff we sort of know about, like the Earth is round, to stuff we don't know anything about. Why not? I love it.
Now we're just going to make up a bunch of facts. So yeah, are we really better than Kyrie?
We fact check it like immediately. It's great.
On Wikipedia, which is can be totally edited by people that don't believe the Earth is round. Fact checking
multiple sources.
Fact checking is for communists.
This week, Undergoogables is kind of is influenced by what's been happening this week. Found out that we apparently have a fairly large fan base, the Undebeatables do, in Sweden. And
shout out.
Yeah, shout out Sweden.
Shout out.
Kind of shocked, in fact. It's either like one guy with 100 devices, or we actually have a fan base there. Pretty cool. I then came home that night and saw that President Donald Trump had called out Sweden in his press conference. He said, just look at all the stuff that happened in Sweden yesterday, referring to some sort of terrorist attack that didn't happen. And I thought, these things sort of came together for me in my head, and I said, what do I know about Sweden? And I don't, not sure, I think I need you guys to make sure that I know that there's a difference between Sweden and Switzerland. If you guys could help me with that.
Oh, God.
Sure. No. That's not the question. Just what do we know about Sweden and what makes it different than Switzerland?
Well, full disclosure, I'm a quarter Swedish, so maybe I've just got like some weird extended family I don't know about.
Okay.
Who's our entire listener base out there? I have no idea.
Okay, awesome. That's good. Yeah. Well, first of all, where is it geographically?
It's next to Norway. It's
It's in Scandinavia.
Scandinavia. It's that big downward-facing peninsula-looking guy.
Scandinavia. What's the difference between Scandinavia and the Nordic countries?
Not much. They're basically overlapping.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So is Scandinavia Nordic? Because that's what I thought. And you said Scandinavia, and I got nervous.
I think Nordic refers...
I don't know what the difference between Scandinavian and Nordic is, but like Norway is where Nordic, I'm assuming, comes from.
No.
The people that were into Nordic
religions. Well, yeah, sure. Religions, right? Yeah, Norse. Yeah.
Norway comes from Nordic.
I assume that has to do with the actual Vikings, which would make it sort of an ethno-cultural group, right? So that would be...
Okay.
And Nordic. Is Scandinavia
because
also
Norse is
right.
Viking, right?
Right. North mythology.
That's like Valhalla and all that good stuff.
Odin.
Right.
I saw that movie.
Oh, if you're not watching it, check out Vikings on HBO or Showtime or whatever it is. It's awesome.
No, it's on the History Channel.
Okay. It's on Amazon Video. That's where I watch it.
Gotcha.
It is awesome.
So it's Nordic. So Sweden is Nordic and Scandinavian. We're not sure the difference between those things, but is Scandinavian?
Yeah. So it's like you got your Sweden, you got your Norway, you got your Denmark.
Okay.
You got Iceland. I guess would fall on that. Maybe.
Sure. Mm. Cold up there.
Would.
Do the Netherlands fall into that cluster? No.
I mean,
they're more just straight up European.
Finland.
Finland, yes.
So I used to, weirdly, when I was in grade school, I would do reports on Sweden.
Okay, so you know more than I do.
And sadly, I don't remember much. I remember they had a Kris Kringle type thing, but they would put out wooden shoes to get in the wooden shoes outside their door on Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. I kind of remember that. And then we used to make a breakfast pastry thing that was like apples, and it was like an apple turnover.
Like basically. A strudel?
Kind of like a strudel, but yeah. That's my extent of what
they
I
also
about
they actually at one time had a fairly powerful empire. They mixed it up with Peter the Great.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so that's
Peter the Great? No. Frederick the Great.
I'm curious what kind of government they have. Do they have, is it socialist? Is it democracy?
I think it's a democratic socialist republic, yeah.
Okay.
What do we got? What's the capital of Sweden? Copenhagen? No, that's Denmark.
That's Denmark.
Stockholm syndrome. I know that about Sweden.
Yes, that's a thing.
Patty Case, what was her name? Patty Hearst.
Patty Hearst.
Yeah, there you go.
Sure.
Fell in love with her captors.
Yes, but I don't know when they originally.
Finland. That's the other Scandinavian country.
Yeah, Coulson got that one earlier.
Okay, sorry.
So it's not Switzerland. Anything that we know that Sweden's known for? The things that I think of, and I don't know if this says anything about my vocation or my hobbies, but Svedka vodka is from Sweden.
Sure.
And
sure,
so sure. is Malort, the Swedish liqueur. Have you guys had the Malort?
They do make things. I mean, most countries make some kind of booze, and they definitely do. It's really cold up there. You need booze.
Is IKEA from Sweden?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's right.
I think a big fishing country, certainly.
They're right on the water. I thought you said there was Denmark on one side.
Do they have fjords?
Dev Fjords.
Norway was on the other, but they're connected to Stockholm's a waterway
Denmark
city.
Denmark is actually part of mainland Europe, but they've got they're the thing that bridges in between, right?
Okay.
Or the closest thing to a bridge.
So it's a maritime country.
Coast. It's very much, but yes, I mean, the Scandinavia is where the Vikings came from.
Okay.
And then they then attacked mainland Europe and England. Gotcha. Okay. Swedish Chef.
Oh, there you go.
Yep.
We know the Swedish Chef.
Fergen, Bergen, Dergen.
Flippin' Jacksons.
Flippin' Jacksons. All right, on that note, I think we nailed that.
Does anybody want to go in on, like, biggest export?
Oh, actually, I want to know how big the country is. Like, how many people live there? Do we have that? Do we know?
Small population, rather large country. I'm going to go with 80 million people, and it's the size of Texas.
Oh, so wow. It's big. Okay. In Europe, that would be massive.
I'm going to go way smaller than that.
Yeah, it can't be 80 million. It's like 20.
I think it's like 15 million.
Yeah, it's like 20.
And it's the size of New Jersey or something.
I'm gonna stick with Texas, but I'm gonna stick with 20 mil.
Okay, I'm gonna go somewhere in between. I think it's big. Not as big as Texas, but big, and I think it's 20 million. I like that. Let's go with that.
It's 174,000 square miles.
Okay.
22 inhabitants per square kilometer.
That's not very much.
No. Germanic peoples have inhabited Sweden since prehistoric times.
Ooh, Germanic.
There you go.
Burn.
Constituting the sea peoples known as Norsemen.
Okay. So it's Nordic.
Constitutional monarchy and parliamentary democracy.
So it's got the old, like...
I forgot. They do have... They've got an actual monarch.
Yeah. He gives out the Nobel Prize, I think. Okay, what did you say landmass wise?
174,000 square miles.
Okay. So Texas is 268,000.
So considerably smaller, about two-thirds.
Yeah.
Stockholm is the capital.
Hey, look at us.
We got one thing.
Hey, we got the Germanic people.
Okay, so it's way bigger than Jersey. But
it's way smaller than Texas. So Coulson was right. He went right in the middle.
He went in between.
Yeah, sure.
I'm surrounded by smart people. I try to guide us to the middle ground.
Did we say how many people?
This says 10 million people.
Yep, 10 million. So under that.
Right.
Per capita, almost 50,000. GDP, sorry.
Is that high or low?
That's very good. Scandinavia is commonly used for Denmark, Norway, and Sweden. And Nordic country is used unambiguously for Denmark, Norway, Sweden, Finland, and Iceland, including their associated territories, Greenland, the Faroe Islands, and Åland Islands.
But what's the difference? So clearly Nordic is connected to Norse, right? But what's Scandinavia connected to? Why is that so much smaller?
Scandinavia is the actual sort of peninsular guy that connects to Denmark. So those are...
The name Scandinavia originally referred vaguely to the formerly Danish, now Swedish region in Scania. The term entered the usage in the late 18th century as terms for the region with their Germanic majority peoples and associated languages and cultures.
All right. Well, I think we learned a lot.
Yeah.
Let's take a break. Let's listen to some music. This week we're going to feature a song that I found on the Bring Down the Band website. It's World Gone Crazy featuring Kasky by RxH, which I think is supposed to be Prescription H. Anyway, you can check it out. SoundCloud. Links in the show notes.
For free!
For free!
I swear the world's gone crazy. Loud, loud, loud. I swear the world's gone crazy. Loud, loud, loud. I swear the world's gone crazy. Loud, loud, loud. I swear the world's gone crazy. Loud, loud, loud. I wake up, push the penny in my cup. Stay awake, I'm so impatient for this buck. Plus I'm pushing for the city, cause the station ain't the plug. Everybody looking at me so tough. You ain't made mistakes, you ain't fornicate. You ain't play with fire, you ain't got no faith. You ain't gotta pray, but we probably should. We are death row, and you ain't close to sure. You ain't bossing up, you ain't fit, dog. There's only so much space in every scene, dog. Where your name at, and where you rather be? For your lady, for your baby, you just wanna be. Oh, what a scene, and what a time to be alive when others die over racial pride. But what that really say, that we better off or we better dead? Nobody innocent, no. Loud, loud, loud. I swear the world's gone crazy. Loud, loud, loud. I swear the world's gone crazy. Loud, loud, loud. I swear the world's gone crazy.
Break. Thanks to RXH for that hot track. Now it's time for Joey's Stat of the Week.
Joey's Stat of the Week!
In absentia. This week the statistic is a number.
Weird.
And that number is 3,112. And that is the number of passes that John Wall has thrown this season, which is the most in the National Basketball Association. 3,112. Second place, not far behind, Isaiah Thomas at 2,935. DeMarcus Cousins at 2,829. And Anthony Davis at 2,510. Wow.
So these are not assists. These are just physical passes on the basketball court.
Straight up passes. John Wall, of those 3,112... 83% are chess passes.
He enjoys the chess pass.
Shout out fundamentals.
Fundamentals. Make it pop. Shout out to NBA.com/stats for that.
And shout out to Joey, who couldn't be here today, but still's giving us stats.
All right, we got one more thing to talk about this week, and that's our game of the week.
Game of the week. Game of the week.
This week we're going to call it the game on Saturday, second out of a back-to-back, at Miami. The last time the Pacers traveled to Miami, yours truly was upset that they clearly went out on South Beach and blew a totally winnable game because the Miami Heat were horrible, so they took them too easy. Now, flip that script. The Pacers are not playing well, and the Miami Heat are on fire, no pun intended, for the last couple weeks. This is a key, critical game. So what are you guys looking for in this one? How are the Pacers going to win?
Well, so this team has won 14 of its last 16. When you say they're on fire, they're playing some of the best ball in the NBA. Two guys... Oh, really, they've only got two players, right? They've got a team playing fairly well, but it's all about Hassan Whiteside and Goran Dragic. And Whiteside is just killing it. He's averaging 14 boards a game and 2.1 blocks. Goran Dragic is over 20 points a game and 6.2 assists, but arguably playing a little bit better than his numbers, especially of late.
That's a career year for him, numbers-wise, and yeah, my goodness.
So we're gonna have to do something to just throw bodies at the glass. This is always something that's important for the Pacers. and we're gonna have to just wear them out. I mean, we're gonna have to go at them and stay aggressive. We're gonna need to score some points in this one. But as always, for us, it comes down to energy on defense. So we're going out against some big bodies. But we're going to have to go play with force, win our individual matchups, still a winnable game.
To put a exclamation point on your point, Hassan Whiteside, the last time we played them, ate our lunch. We went for 26 and 22. And really just gave us fits. So, Miles Turner, eat your Wheaties, man. Get on that glass.
This is... this may go to a... or go back to an earlier conversation or something, but... Miles Turner doesn't necessarily take those challenges and go with force to the glass. He just hasn't this season. And this is a situation where he's going to have to, or we're going to get beat. I mean, we've got to, you got to box out. You got to go get the rebounds. We've lost games. And it's about force and intention. And that means staying in front of Gordon Dragic and keeping Whiteside off the glass. It's the only way to get this done.
Well, I think we got to get a big game from PG. They have nobody to deal with PG, and he's got to take advantage of that and score a bunch of points and really put the team on his shoulders and be an all-star, be an all-NBA guy, which he is, and go out and win a game.
This should be a dream matchup for him. They don't have anything approaching.
They have zero people that can deal with him.
Yeah, they got nothing.
Well, we need this game. This is a really tough stretch of games for us, and this one we got to circle and win.
Yeah. So this stretch, we mentioned it on Monday show, but we play at Miami, then at Houston, at San Antonio, at Atlanta, and at Charlotte. So, this is clearly this game and probably the Charlotte game. If you look at just record-wise, those are the two games you want to pick off, at least. And then you try to steal another one, and you get yourself a winning road trip.
Yeah. The problem here is that I'm sure you mentioned this is the second half of a back-to-back on the road after Memphis. So not an easy task.
We're really good at those.
And we've got three games in four nights, that Houston game's on Monday, again on the road. So nothing easy about this upcoming stretch of basketball.
Oh, God. This could get ugly fast.
Well, yeah. So we're currently on a six-game slide. Come out of the break to the Grizzlies, then this five-game road trip we're talking about. This could very easily be a 12-game losing streak if we don't start playing with some energy and force.
Oh, somebody's got a really good Gipper speech coming out of the All-Star break.
Yeah. Or we're going to have to get a sponsorship from a whiskey company.
We are taking calls.
Because things are happening.
Elysian, call me.
Well, speaking of, I was drinking an Elysian earlier. What was I drinking? Oh, the Immortal IPA.
Ooh, good one. I had one that East I've never found before. The Dayglow IPA.
Ooh.
And I don't know if you can see it, but there's definitely a tiger shooting lasers out of his eyes.
Mm. I just wanted freaking tigers with laser beams. All right. Well, that'll wrap us up for this show. Thanks for listening. Between now and then, you can get at us on Twitter. We're at Undebeatables. We're on facebook.com/TheUndebeatables. You can find us, you can subscribe in iTunes, you can subscribe on Stitcher. If you're over there in iTunes, drop a review. It really helps us out and helps people find the show. We've got a website, theundebeatables.com. You can go there and find the backlog of every episode that we've ever done, if you should choose to take that path. I would start with episode 5, maybe.
No, like I said, just listen to the extras number 50.
Start with episode 50.
Yeah.
Okay.
So listen to,
right around
listen to that. You'll get all caught up, and then you can go ahead. Hours of listening pleasure after that.
And if you love basketball, check out all the pods on almightyballer.com.
Absolutely.
Tons of great basketball knowledge out there. Check them out. Review them on iTunes.
If you're over on our website, we also have a contact form, so you can send us a message there, or you can email us, shoutout@theundebeatables.com.
We're expecting some messages from Sweden. We need to know what we've got wrong.
If you listen in Sweden,
give us some some better answers to what we came up with today.
Hit Google Translate before you send, please.
I thought you spoke Swedish.
It turns out all Swedes speak English, it turns out, so it's fine.
Sure.
And probably German.
Your family is Swedish, but your last name is Harper. That's not a very Swedish name. Do you have like a Swedish... What is the Swedish name in your heritage?
Johnson.
Jonsson?
Jonsson. Nice. Johansson. Americanized like Johansson.
Sure. All right. And lastly, if you're at the website, we do have a few t-shirts of the Schmedium variety.
Got a ton of Schmediums.
Yeah.
Grab you one of those.
We'll get more t-shirts.
That's right.
We'll make that
happen. Yeah, if you want a t-shirt and you're an extra large human being, don't be afraid. Reach out to us. We'll make sure you get a shirt.
Yeah, hit up that contact form.
For our once and always coach, Bobby Slick Leonard. Turn out the lights. The party's over. We showed nothing against Milwaukee or the Wizards, so I'm not guaranteeing anything. And then it's at Miami.
But you can't lose at home coming out of the All-Star break, can you?
I don't know with this team anymore.
I feel like we're bad out of the break as the Pacers team is just annually bad out of the break.
So we're dropping the first game and we're winning in Miami.
Well, hey. We don't have time to go out in Miami because it's the second half of back-to-back. That might be our saving grace.
Mm. Yeah. We can't go out in Miami.
Unless we do some daytime drinking, it is a late game.
I'll be doing that the day of the game, clearly. Good Lord. I assume that we'll have some sort of trade or have whiffed on a trade, which will affect our locker room chemistry. Because I think... Either way, like if we bring in somebody, something changes, and if we whiff on it, that also affects our locker room.
Let me ask you this. Sure. Is there any team in the league right now with worse locker room chemistry than us besides maybe the Sacramento Kings?
New York.
You took my answer.
I don't even know about New York because it's not really the locker room. That's a management issue.
I don't think Chicago really likes one another.
But the two most important guys do.
Sure.
But, I mean, are you saying
that... may also be true in Ireland.
Right. Are you saying that PG doesn't like Jeff Teague and Miles Turner?
I mean, he seems to back up Jeff Teague publicly. He hasn't said much either way about Miles.
That is true. He didn't talk about Miles Turner at all. Like, about how he's his little buddy or how... You know, he's the future with me.
He's my personal project because I'm going to be here for the rest of my career.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought about that, and that makes me incredibly sad.
You know, but there's so many other projects to be had. I don't think that's a kick in the nuts, right? Because, I mean, maybe Jeff Teague's his project this year because he knows that he's got to get him signed next year.
Right. Well, for me, you know, it seems like Paul George is an incredibly hard worker, and but is he missing the element that super duper duper stars have, which is I just want to step on your throat thing? Does he? Because he has a sense of the moment. He seems to have a lot of the ingredients, but he doesn't seem to want to destroy all comers. You know, it just doesn't. He didn't necessarily seem wired the way that LeBron is or Chris Paul is or Westbrook is.
Maybe, but you're the one who, who's making reference to his impressive fourth quarter numbers, right?
No, I'm saying he has a sense of the moment, but is it... There's just so many games this year where I didn't feel like he just wanted to win that badly because he has the talent to do it when he wants to.
I mean, he's certainly not Michael Jordan, but in order for him to get to the next level, does he just need more confidence around him? Because this team just doesn't have any.
Yeah. It really, I keep coming down to the idea that it's it's not about the talent. It's just there's something, we don't have the correct mix of personalities, that these guys are passive.
I'm ready to fire Nate McMillan right now. I'm just done with him.
No, I'm kind of with you. I feel like
I'm with you.
I'm ready for Mark Jackson right now.
I think that changes this team dramatically.
Yeah, fundamentally. And I think, overnight. Like, to me right now, I really believe that we're at a point where, I mean, I said it, every game we lose makes our task more difficult, right?
Yeah.
Sure.
To keep Paul. And we've got to, we're going to have to start rolling the dice, you know?
You, by flipping coaches at this point in the season, you can make the playoffs, but you're not. That's not saving this season. It's for the next season, right? I mean, that's what you just have to say, hey, look, we're going to get a head start on this now.
I mean, part of it is...
And I don't even know that that's a true statement. I mean, I think Paul George has proven himself to be a straight-up baller in the postseason. And if you change the attitude of the rest of the team and get him into the postseason with good momentum and, you know, some optimism and a good matchup, he could definitely... get you out of the first round and compete like hell in the second round, you know?
Yeah. I mean, we have
like if we can climb up to the four spot or five spot and play whoever, Atlanta in the first round, or who would it be? Washington?
Hopefully Atlanta.
Yeah, hopefully Atlanta.
But, I mean, organizationally, though, the first thing that someone has to take control of this organization, right? Like... I don't feel like this is Larry's organization, right? Because he's so out of touch with his players, right? And it's not Nate's organization because it's like he feels beholden and answers to Larry, but to the detriment of being in touch with his players, right? Like,
well, we never hear from Kevin Pritchard, but he's probably doing most. Probably doing most of the.
Are we still GM paying
work.
Him?
Yeah, he probably does most of the GM work, probably. And then Donnie Walsh is a special advisor. He's still getting paid. So I feel like those two guys are real basketball minds. But all we ever hear from is Larry Bird. So I assume that they're... I feel like they're probably real decent people with their pulse on the... with their finger on the pulse of this team.
So we just talk about it all wrong all the time. These aren't Larry Bird's trades. These are Scott and... Donnie's moves that Larry Bird is taking the heat for, right? He's taking credit or blame for it either way.
I don't think that's the case either.
The franchise.
I don't think that's the case either. I mean, I think Larry Bird drinks some Budweisers and makes some calls, and people say okay.
I mean, I don't know any or other organization in the NBA that has the president of basketball operations that's more well known than the GM.
Right,
like I can't name
right
another team that's structured like this.
But what I would say is that we have historically drafted very well, and that most of those good drafts I would attribute to Donnie Walsh and Pritchard. And when we draft poorly, I assume it's Larry Bird's fault. That's how I feel about it.
I mean, for me, I feel like the problem is I don't know what Scott Pritchard does. I don't know what Donnie Walsh does. I feel like Larry Bird does or takes credit for everything. And regardless of the reality of
things... And we blame him for everything when it goes wrong.
That's an organizational problem. If I, as a fan, don't know who's running my team, and it's got to be a problem, I mean, I would think...
I don't know that
Pritchard
it's...
And Donnie Walsh, and clearly for Nate McMillan and his team...
Yes. There's nobody who's steering the ship. That's the problem. Right.
I just, if Larry Bird is the guy making the decisions and he just, like, occasionally just doesn't know his players' names, or I don't know how Jeff Teague feels. Who's Jeff Teague? Like, these are, he can't run an organization like that.
Teague is from Indiana.
If I was Paul George, I'd be tempted to leave. I mean, maybe what he's really lobbying for is getting Larry out of there, but Larry ain't going.
Right, he's not going anywhere.
Right.
So, I mean, that almost means, by definition, Paul George is leaving, so...
So, right. Do you...
It's the rock and a hard place situation, because Mel Simon ain't firing Larry Bird.
Right.
Like, that's just not going to happen.
Right. Nope. Now, do you... clearly, you don't trade Paul George at this deadline, but do you start looking at it in the offseason, or like you said during the pod, do you wait until the trade deadline of next year? Like that's now you're in a bad position, right? Now you're
we're already in a bad position.
Your hand is forced,
well,
though.
I think you do everything you possibly can in the off season to get him happy,
right? But if you have to wait until the trade deadline, your hand is forced.
Here's my problem, though. What is the most that we can do, right? Because the guy who's at least ostensibly in charge of all this shit isn't willing to walk down and talk to a dude. Like, as near as I can tell, the last conversation that happened between Larry Bird and Paul George was when he told him that he didn't really want to play for, but did want to play for a championship team. Like, that's the last time they talked.
Which was like 2 years ago.
Yeah, it's like 2 years ago. So, I mean, is Larry Bird, do we really think that he's going to go out and make a tough play for Paul George in the offseason and grease him up? Like, what's going to happen?
Right.
We're definitely going to screw this up, though. That's what's going to happen.
Napa know-how.
A Napa guy knows more isn't always better, unless we're talking about full-size vans. These beasts do more than get you from A to B. They have so much space a man can live in it. With shag carpeting, waterbed, and a sweet lava lamp, these mobile abodes have all the comforts of home. With quality parts and plenty of Napa know-how, you can keep the original tiny house running longer, stronger. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
There is more to me, Queen Eliara of Elfgard, than my elven magic. Just as there's more to GEICO than saving you money, GEICO also gives you 24/7 access to licensed agents online, on the phone, or on the GEICO app. And while I am a mighty elf queen, I am also a mighty big fan of barbecue potato chips. Minions! More smoky mesquite!
GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.